Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm John Wilson. Welcome to These Three, a series in which I talk to artists, musicians, writers, directors, actors, photographers, all sorts of creative people, in fact, about their artistic lives by focusing on three key works, one that they made themselves, that they're particularly proud of, one by somebody else that they wish they'd made, and one that they're working on right now.
Hello, this is Natalie Merchant, and you're listening to John Wilson and myself. It's not in that key. It's not an E, it's not an A.
No, you can't remember which key it's in.
I can't remember what key it was in.
Feeling your way back through the keys.
I know I always write in keys that piss off guitar players.
The sharps and flats.
I write on the piano, so they always say, can we just drop it a half step? Lots of flats. And then it goes somewhere else. There it is, E.
Oh, yes.
Didn't that feel
That's
good?
The one, yeah, that was the one, wasn't it?
That was the pit of despair we fell in.
E flat minor.
E flat. Major.
Major, okay.
But it sounds minor, doesn't
it?
Yeah. It's dark in there. It's very, very dark. Don't be afraid. I will be your guide. It's the devil calling. Okay.
Natalie started out with the band 10,000 Maniacs. She launched a solo career in 1995 with the album Tiger Lily. I think there have been, five or six albums since then, Natalie, and still performing regularly, not recording quite as often or as regularly as the live performances. But I'm delighted to say that you're here, sitting at a piano. We should just say where we are, in fact. This is the Oscar Wilde room of the Café Royal Hotel in London's West End. And what an amazing, beautiful, gilded room around us. Oscar Wilde apparently used to dine here and drink here.
I saw him yesterday.
Oscar.
I did.
Yeah, well, his ghost.
Royal Academy.
Ah, his portrait.
That he was just one figure at the, what do they call, the Great Spectacle?
The summer show.
Show.
Yeah, the Royal Academy summer
they
show.
They had a display of the history of it, the 250 years. And there was a Victorian portrait. And in it, you could find different characters at the opening. And a young Oscar Wilde.
Right.
So I did see him yesterday.
You saw him, and now we're in his room.
We're in his room. We're zeroing in.
How's the piano sound?
Oh, it sounds good.
Yeah. I don't think this piano was there when he was hanging out.
No, Yamaha. I don't think they were importing pianos from Japan at the time.
So I've set you the task, Natalie. Three songs. Let's start with The Song I Wrote. Which one are you nominating?
The song I wrote, I was thinking of Lulu.
Which is a more recent song, actually, isn't it? Isn't it from the last album, which is
2014.
It's a character study, isn't it?
Yes, it's a biographical sketch of Louise Brooks.
They said that Hollywood was never gonna be the same without you. Still you're gone.
And why her?
How why can we her? Forget that face, because such a powerful iconic figure in American pop culture. He was one of the early film stars.
And everybody knew your name.
The path of her life was so rugged, but touched with fire. At the age of, I think she was 15, she was recognized as such an incredible dancer that with a chaperone, she went to New York City and joined a modern dance company, a pioneering modern dance company, the Denishawn Dancers.
She came to London as well, I think, didn't she? She danced, I read somewhere that she was the first person to dance the flapper dance, I think, in London.
Probably in 1929, because she was in Germany making two films with Wilhelm George Pabst. She made Diary of the Lost Girl and Pandora's Box. But she went to New York City and ended up dancing burlesque, or In the Follies, which was basically burlesque at the time, which was just, you know, scantily clad women.
Yeah, I've just realized you know loads about Louise Brooks. Yeah. This is not just sort of watching her on the screen
and being a fan. She became Charlie Chaplin's lover, I think, when she was about 20 years old, and she was in the Ziegfeld Follies, and then she went to Hollywood, and she was in some early silent films, but she found Hollywood to be really trivial, and she couldn't get the roles she wanted. And because she had that modern dance training, she moved with such elegance and beauty, and she thought the acting was histrionic. She didn't want to be part of that. And then she went to Germany and was in these two incredible films, really controversial films, too. Diary of a Lost Girl, she's raped, and she gives birth to an illegitimate child, and then she joins a brothel. And but anyway, she was the toast of the town in Berlin in 1929, and that's not that long after the First World War. She came back to Hollywood thinking that she was going to be the conquering hero, and the doors were shut.
Because she'd gone to Germany?
That, and she walked out on her contract with a major studio when she went to Germany.
Germany, 1929, Weimar. And lots happening in Berlin.
Yeah.
A lot of very exciting people there gathering.
Christened in straight up Jane Pandora, was born in Weimar, Berlin, and that was the rise before the fall. Everybody sat in the dark, dark, black as night. Everybody wanted to go.
I'm probably making this podcast way too long, but her story is phenomenal. She ended up, she could not get a decent role in Hollywood. So she went back to Wichita, and she taught dance for a while, lived with her mother, and then ended up in New York City. And an extreme alcoholic and reclusive. And one day she came back to her apartment, and there was someone had put a flyer in the elevator talking about some silent film party, and they had drawn a cartoon of her. And she ripped it off the wall, and she went to the apartment of the person who was hosting the party and was like, "How dare you?" And he had no idea that she lived in the building, and that's how she was discovered.
Wow.
The director of the Eastman House in Rochester, who was a film historian, was contacted and convinced her to come live in Rochester, where Eastman Kodak was based. And she lived out the rest of her life there in Rochester, which was really close to where I grew up. And she didn't die till 1985. And my best friend Mary Beth and I would all the time is a plot, how are we going to get to Rochester and find Louise Brooks?
Oh, you knew she was there?
Yeah, we knew she was there. There were rumors.
You never saw her there?
She died in 85 and knowing it. And we also, what would we have had to say to her, really?
You know, so you said it in a song instead, several decades later.
When nobody knew your name, nobody knew your name.
Can you remember writing it?
I do. Oftentimes when I'm writing, they'll just be a phrase, you know, I'll always come up with the chords and then there'll be a melody, and then just a phrase will kind of bubble to the surface. There was something about a wishing well, and it had nothing to do with Louise Brooks. So I do remember that. And so for about a year, it was all the fun down the wishing well, and I was like, I don't know what the hell this is about. You go from the gibberish stage into, okay, I have to now attach some meaning to this chord progression. Then the words came pretty quickly because I knew so much about her.
Do you often write out the piano and do the words form with the chords, or are they written down separately?
Never.
Ah.
The words are written as a response to the chords. Yeah.
So the chords, the music, the sound suggests stories.
Well, I'm going to find in my book here. I printed a little book.
Mm.
Because I'm on a strike. I am not bringing my computer. I'm taking a break from my computer. I want to go to England the way I did in 1982-3 and bring my Moleskine journal and my little chord book. But anyway, so every chord has emotional connotations to it. And what is this making me feel when I move from this chord to this chord? Did that. What does it make you feel? I mean, I definitely, when I go from the B, there's a release there.
And hope.
Hope. It's a hopeful transition.
There's an uplift, isn't there?
Yeah, okay, now write a song about that. I made you feel something.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you want to make someone else feel. Feel that, and I could just sit here playing for hours, and we could just continue to feel that, and we'd have our own associations with that progression.
Well, exactly, and I just came up with the word hope there. I mean, that could be a word in a lyric, or it could then be just a mood.
Or a scenario.
A scenario.
But yeah. I felt it too. This is like, there's not conflict here, but there's, to me, in this B chord, there's something unresolved there. We attach meaning to that, and it's magic, actually, because it is so ephemeral, it's so obscure, and it's so objective, but at some point you have to just lay down the law, okay? This means, they said that Hollywood was never gonna be the same without you. Still you're gone.
And that's the beginning of Lulu.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. The song you wish you'd written.
Oh, Bobby Gentry, Ode to Billy Joe.
It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day.
That was a really unusual song when it was released because it broke some of the conventions because it was so long and it told a story.
It was dark.
And it's very dark.
It was 1968, I believe, when she wrote that. And I think Bobby Gentry is as mysterious as her song in the same way that Louise Brooks burned bright and then sort of vanished.
Was it a song that you grew up with?
I can specifically remember that song.
From your mum or from the radio?
From the radio. Yeah, we listened to the radio in the car all the time. And so I had a lot of memories of driving around that summer and hearing that song. And I was really, really young. And the song was played on the radio for many years after 1968. But 1968 was such a turbulent, weird summer. There were riots and assassinations and burning cities, and I was a very small child. I was only 4 or 5 years old.
But you remember hearing the song?
Oh, definitely.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And did you follow the story? Was it something about that kind of suggestion of what happens? Because it's never explicit in the song. I mean, what's your interpretation of the narrative?
A boy jumps off a bridge and kills himself.
Seems like nothing ever comes to no good up on Choctaw Ridge. And now Billy Joe McAllister's jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
You know, at 4 or 5 years old, to try to comprehend why someone would end life. And as I got older, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, and it just went deeper, and it was mysterious, and I'd never been to the South, and so as I got older and I learned about slavery in the Deep South, and so it started to evoke these, the song just sort of fleshed out over the years, cotton plantations and magnolia trees and Spanish moss, and this kind of murky, swampy, Southern Gothic. And as I got older and I started reading some of the Southern Gothic writers like Tennessee Williams and Carson McCullers and Flannery O'Connor, the song has deepened and changed in meaning. You know, I'd never been to Mississippi until I was probably 20 years old. So I had my picture that Bobby Gentry had painted for me, but then I went down to the Deep South and filled it in with my own senses.
So you get a sense of the South, you get a sense of the place, and we hear about the bridge, obviously, because that's where Billy Joe threw himself off the bridge. Billy Joe McAllister, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But the story is told around a kitchen table. There's a family, and there seems to be a girl, a protagonist, who is right. Somehow linked to Billy Joe. And it's what's not said.
It's such a clever approach to a song, because it is just a conversation around a table. It's almost like a chapter or a paragraph from a Southern Gothic novel that you just found torn on the side of the road. You pick it up, you read it, you have no idea. There's no context. You know, we talk about the Carroll County Picture Show and how they put a frog down her back.
That nice young preacher, Brother Taylor, dropped by today.
The nice Reverend Brother Taylor stopped by today. He said he'd be pleased to have dinner on Sunday. And by the way, he said he saw a girl look a lot like you up on Choctaw Ridge.
He said he saw a girl that looked a lot like you up on Choctaw Ridge.
She and Billy Joe was throwing something off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
And she and Billy Joe was throwing something off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
What were they throwing off the bridge?
We don't know. It's the great mystery.
What do you think? Because this song has been analyzed endlessly, hasn't it?
Yeah, I've always just let the mystery be. Sometimes I see flowers going off the bridge. I think in all these years she's never told anyone. And by coincidence, it's one of the songs that I was going to do on my tour. So I had it.
When you say it's the song you wish you'd written, is it because there is something about it as a songwriter that you admire, or is it a song that you particularly love as a fan?
Both.
Is there anything that you've borrowed from it over the years or taken? You know, when you listen as a songwriter to another work that you admire, and, I mean, I'm not suggesting you've taken chords from it, or but just the technique or the narrative or the
I
character.
Think quoting characters and also writing in a dialect. She wrote in a southern dialect here, and there have been times that I've written songs and I've included dialogue in the lyrics and tried to capture the voice of the character. Can I just sing an a cappella?
Yeah.
It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. Well, I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered out the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. And then she said, I got a bit of news this morning off from Choctaw Ridge. Today, Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
That was so beautiful. You, in fact, you attracted the attention of the hotel staff. They're all kind of trying to pour in here to see what's happening in the Oscar Wilde room. Ode to Billy Joe, the song you wish you'd written. Great song, great story. The song you're writing, Natalie, because I reckon all songwriters have a melody going through their heads at any given moment. Is that true, or do you only hear the melodies and do the songs start to work when you're sitting here at the piano? And
no, it's both. I mean, there's music in my head all the time. It's my affliction and my joy at the same time. Depends on what song it is. It's my affliction, but there's music all the time.
So there is a song that you are writing at the moment?
Yes, there's a song, and I tend to work on songs over years. They just sort of roll around. There's one called Guardian Angel that I've been working on for about 10 years.
10 years on one song?
It's a song about grief. I witnessed a dear friend of mine lost both her children and her husband in the same year, all to different illnesses. And at the third funeral I attended, I watched her fall to her knees. And I just imagined, you know, I write songs that are meaningful to me. And I just tried to imagine what kind of bargaining you'd have to do, you know, to try to come to terms with that. Mm. And I thought about the stages of grief, the shock and disbelief and the anger and denial and the depression and then the final acceptance. And so I wanted to write a song about this sort of grief.
Was it cathartic, though? Is that part of the process of trying to deal with
that
grief?
But it's so, I think working on this song is so painful that I just, I keep putting it off. But it is very therapeutic. Bad things happening to good people. How is that possible? Why is that allowed? And I thought about the personification of the guardian angel. And what if your guardian angel abandons you? And then you're subject to the evil forces. Or what if, worse than that, your guardian angel was a dark force and turned against you?
That's the scenario
that
you're exploring.
And so that's the scenario of the songs. Guardian Angel is at first, and then going through the stages of grief of first, I can't believe that you would do this to me, you would allow this to happen to me, and I'm angry that it's happened to me. In the end, it's Guardian Angel, I don't believe you would ever take from me all the things I love. But anyway, it's about Guardian Angel, I'm begging you, please forgive the things I do, because this must be my fault. I must have done something to bring this on myself, so please forgive me. And then guardian angel, I don't believe that you would take everything from me, everything I love, everything that is, I hold dear. And then guardian angel, I'm on my knees, you know, I'm begging you, this is the bargaining phase. Hear me, come back, don't you pity me, can't you pity me? And then, and it's the anger of guardian angel, I'll track you down, there's no place on earth you can't be found, you won't escape my rage. And then the refrain,
take my breath away, take my breath away, take my breath away.
That goes there. But the refrain is just a mantra of take my breath away. And if you were to, if your guardian angel were to make herself present to you, it would be awe-inspiring and it would take your breath away. Or take my breath away is like, let me die. I can't bear this anymore. Or take my breath away, sort of challenging the angel to reveal herself. So, I've been wrestling with this one for a while.
I'm not surprised it's taken so long. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard enough to talk about, but I mean.
And I always try to write music that in some way could bring comfort to people, but what if you're inconsolable? Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where my friend was for a long time. Inconsolable, and rightly so.
Yeah.
So sometimes the music just feels kind of impotent.
So is it done now? Is the song finished?
No, it's still done.
In the process. Do you think you'll ever finish it?
Or yes, I will. I need to finish it. And then I want to play it for her. And now she's losing her sight. She's going blind. And she is the most generous-hearted person. It really makes you want to not believe in God, to think that this series of events could just rain down on someone so good.
Does this friend of yours know that you're writing this song?
No, she doesn't.
But what will she make of it, do you think?
Well, music was such a comfort to her daughters, especially my music, that I should finish this for her.
Well, I hope you get to finish the song, Natalie, and I hope your friend gets to hear it. It's a very powerful thing, music, isn't it?
It is. It is for me. And for so many other people. And I think this format that you've come up with is really fascinating, and I'll be looking forward to hearing what other songwriters have to offer.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Natalie, it's great to see you again.
Great to see you too.
Please do rate and review these three. It helps other people find the series. And subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. Also, have a look at the website. We've got more information about all of the guests. There are photographs, videos, previews of forthcoming episodes. We're on Twitter and Instagram, of course. These Three is produced and presented by me, John Wilson, in association with Analog Folk. Thanks for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.